Hello and welcome to the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast, where we listen to people's fairy encounters. But take heed, we're not talking about winged Tinkerbells here. These are real fairies, real encounters that took people like you and I by surprise. Stay a while and hear their stories. My name is Jo Hickey Hall, and I'm a folklore researcher. Dear listener, I hope you're all well. I am still concentrating on writing my book at the moment, and so the episodes are less regular than usual. But over on Patreon, I'm releasing exclusive bonuses that accompany all the episodes, and we're having our monthly Zooms, which, together with our Discord, are, I think, my favourite parts of joining with a like-minded community. They give me faith that this world is going in the right direction. I hope you're all doing okay out there, and if you check out my Patreon, there are some freely available path workings that non-members can access. One of them is an ancestor visualization. There's also a mindfulness meditation for when you're feeling overwhelmed, and you can also trial as a free member if you want to access any of the bonus episodes that are available there. On the 20th of March, we're running another tea ceremony that's open to everyone, members and non-members. You can find more info about that at scarletofthefae.com, but it's Wednesday, the 20th of March, 7:15 in the evening, GMT, when Todd Grube will be leading us through a tea ritual. It's £23 for non-members and £18 for Patreon supporters. So we're just joining together to learn a really simple way to work with a plant medicine that's easily available that aids deep connection to nature beings. Now, this episode was recorded recently when I was contacted by a woman who had heard episode 76, Encounter on the Thames, which was my chat with Frank Scanella. He had met a woman on the riverside in very peculiar circumstances. In that encounter, a dark rider had made an appearance out of nowhere and disappeared with the woman just as strangely. Our guest this time had an equally bizarre encounter with a similarly described man on Glastonbury Tor. What she didn't know was that I'd also been contacted by another woman who'd seen a dark man running up the Tor. And this was all around the time that I was due to chat to Dr. Neil Rushton about his trip up the Tor in October 2023 when he experienced disembodied voices. As we explain in this episode, there are other happenings that have taken place on the Tor and another appearance of the Dark Rider in one of our previous episodes here. I'd really love to speak to anyone who knows any other encounters that have taken place on Glastonbury Tor, either in modern times or in the past. Just a quick note also about the audio in this episode. My side of things was not correctly working, unbeknownst to me at the time, so that's a little fuzzy in places. However, throughout the interview, every time my guest went to talk about this dark man, her broadband kept dropping out and I would lose her from the interview. And I've never had that happen so many times, but it was every time she went to describe something about him. And there are a couple of EVPs that you will note in this episode too. I think it's when I've spoken a couple of times and some other noises come through. I've actually left those in for you to hear. Perhaps you can spot them yourself. But I did find it very interesting that there was definitely a presence around this episode. In the bonus episode, which accompanies this and which I'll release to patrons, we will be looking at the figure of Gwyn ap Nudd, fairy king and god of Anavan, the Brythonic underworld, who is said to dwell in a mythical glass castle within Glastonbury Tor. I hope you enjoy the episode. What really comes over in this conversation is my guest's faith in her intuition. She is open and listening, observant and respectful of the beings and energies that she encounters in the landscape and in sacred sites. This is the way we were meant to live on this earth together. And our ancestors stand by our sides at this time to protect and guide us and remind us of the path that we are here to walk. Here are some beautiful words of truth from my dear friend and teacher, Fox, that I would like to share with you. To those who dare to see, The black arts are the brightest of knowing. Know thy will in fullness of the rose. As one, all separation is healed. Fleeting order is imposed, only to allow chaos to manifest intent. In the lords of misrule will she be found. Dear friends, remain curious. Time to
I was reminded of this when I was listening to episode 76, because there's striking similar kind of things between the two, which is what made me get in contact. So I think it was about 2008. I actually got hand-fasted in Glastonbury. It was 2000. So I've been visiting Glastonbury maybe once a year or once every couple of years since then. And I'm going again soon, actually. But in 2008, I was visiting with a friend of mine. We're both pagan. We've both got kind of interests in that kind of area. I went up the tour. Now, it's not the first time I've been up the tour. I think I'd been up before with my partner and with my little girl as well, who would have been about 4 at the time. She's 19 now. I remember I'd got my shoes off, and I think it must have been summer or late summer, because it was warm enough to take my shoes off or my sandals off and walk up the steps of the tour. Because I thought I'd do some kind of pilgrimage up there, I guess, you know, to sort of connect with the energies and all that kind of stuff. And I took my time and walked up. I don't remember what I did up there. I was probably just wandering around looking at the church on top and at the views. But then it was a weird thing that happened on the way down. And at the time, I didn't think it was weird. It was only later when I thought, hang on a minute, that's a bit odd. So on the way down, I was still barefoot and I was walking quite slowly because the steps of the tour, if anybody knows, are quite uncomfortable to walk on if you've got bare feet. They're sort of concrete and ridged. And I was walking down. About halfway down, I just thought, you know when you feel like there's somebody behind you, or you see it out the corner of your eye. Maybe it was out the corner of my eye, which now I realise was something that people talk about, but I didn't really think much of it at the time. At the corner of my eye, I saw or I felt somebody running down the steps, or at least the slopes. It must have been the slopes behind me. So I sort of looked round and I saw a man running down the sides of the tour in full black motorbike leathers, with a helmet on, with the visor down, a black helmet. And he was kind of not running as in he was chasing anybody or me or anything like that. I didn't feel scared, but kind of like you would do if you were running down a hill, sort of quite fast, or not able to stop almost. So I thought, oh, I better get out of his way. So I stood to the left on the path to move out of his way, and turned around. And when I turned around, he wasn't there. And I remember saying to my friend later and telling him about it. And my rational mind was like, has he gone down a different way? And then I was thinking, well, he can't have, because there's nowhere else he could have disappeared to at this point. He was running. So I just remember thinking it was odd at the time, but just thinking, oh, well, perhaps it was a person. It was only later when I started to think about it, I started to realise that it was a bit odder than at first I thought.
Yeah, this is it. There's so much here that, you know, I want to ask you about. First of all, I'm really interested in the fact that you went to walk up the hill barefoot. And was that something that you've done before there? Or was it something?
Yeah, I think I'd possibly done it before, and I've definitely done it since, but nothing like that had definitely not happened before. And despite sort of trying to have similar experiences since, you know, it's like, it's almost like I can't make it happen again. It's not, nothing like that's ever really happened since, yeah.
What time of day was it?
I think it would have been probably late afternoon, maybe. there were still people about. There were people walking up and down near me, interestingly, and I didn't stop to ask them if they'd seen him. But yeah, I thought he was a normal person, but he obviously wasn't, because he disappeared.
Your friend just wasn't with you for a particular reason? How come you were on your own?
I was probably a little bit fitter. So maybe she might have been there, but she might have been kind of behind me or slower or stopped to look at something. Because we didn't always kind of walk around together. You know, we'd be happy to, you know, that kind of friendship where one will go off and do something and one will go another way, you know. It's, yeah.
Did he look your way when you turned around and saw him?
He was facing me. He had his helmet down, though, so I couldn't see his face. But he was running directly at me, which is why I moved out of his way.
He wasn't kind of like, because I pictured if you're walking down the steps and then someone running on the grass beside that, he's kind of like running in same direction as you, but not, I didn't realise he was running at you.
Well, he was behind me, so, but I didn't feel he was like charging, I didn't feel like he was charging me down, I don't think, because I just thought it was a man in a I didn't realise he, at first thought it was real. I think because the path zigzags, it doesn't go straight down. I think he was on the grass, but I just know that he was coming in a more or less in a straight line down behind me. So maybe I was stood where the path, maybe I was stood at that fork bit where it goes off towards the Eggstone and stuff. And he was on the grass, but
was he as in a kind of like a normal human speed?
He seemed in a rush. It just seemed like, which again doesn't make sense. Just, why was somebody be running like in a rush, like with a motorbike helmet on and the visor down, like running down? I think probably, I mean, I didn't get a sense of any energy with him because I didn't really understand at the time what it was.
And what sort of height was he?
I would say he wasn't small. I would say he was average to tall. But it was hard to tell because he was higher up on the slope than me.
So he's running down, and did you say he was actually running down the slope or running down the step?
I feel he was running down the grass, actually, that he wasn't running on the concrete, yeah.
So you kind of moved from the slope side of the steps that you're on. You've moved to sort of give him room as he goes by. And you've not seen him at the top of the tour.
No.
And you've begun to walk back down and he's appeared. For how long were you aware of him, do you think?
Just a few minutes, literally, I think. It was seeing him out of my corner of my eye, and definitely know it was seeing him enough to know what he was wearing and that he had his helmet on, which is why later on I thought that was strange to have his visor down. But I didn't think that at the time because I thought he was a real person to begin with. But it was a few minutes. It was long enough to see what he was wearing, to see him running towards me and think, oh, I better move out of his way because he's not going to stop. But it was that literally turn around and then he just wasn't there, which was the bit that kind of spooked me a little bit, I think, yeah.
And do you remember what time of year it was?
I think it would have been around between summer and late summer. It was still warm enough to take my shoes up and walk up and down the tour. It wasn't wet. And I tend to visit around those times rather than the winter, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly interesting given the other ways in which this figure pops up, particularly recently in that particular episode, which was that this man was, you know, walking along the Thames and he has this meeting, what he feels to be an otherworldly being. There's lots of strangeness around this meeting. And then this tall, dark rider turns up. And when we think about tall, dark riders, we're thinking dark horsemen, you know, this folkloric figure that turns up in these old tales, turns up in the folklore, he turns up in encounters, you know, we start to think about Men in Black as well, he sort of turns up in all kinds of kind of paranormal accounts. But the ones I'm really thinking of right now are earlier in this podcast series, episode 46. I don't know if you've heard this one, but there was a guy that I spoke to And he was kind of waiting for his wife to finish something in Glastonbury Town. So he took a walk up the tour. And like you, he was quite familiar with the tour.
And this took place on Samhain, Halloween.
And he noticed these women in medieval dress. They called to him and sort of asked him to partake in their wine and oatcakes. He says, no, you're fine, you know, feeling a real sense that he should definitely say no. They just disappear before his eyes. So Glastonbury tour, people disappearing on the tour. Another woman I spoke to recently, we're actually going to arrange and have a proper chat, but she had got in touch and left me some messages. And in July 2002, she was camping at the tour, because there's a few campsites at the base of the tour. She says that she was going for a walk around the fairy fields, and she's walking up towards the tour. She gets to where the fairy, so there's fairy fields and then there's a tree. And she said there's this kind of like three-way intersection at the bottom of those fields. And she's standing there and she notices a tall figure near that tree. And this is dusk, who took off at a ridiculous speed, she says, into the fairy field. So there we've got somebody running on the tour as well. And she described him as being, yeah, this tall, slender figure. And she said the way that he was moving through the undergrowth was not like a human. Because, I mean, you've got huge, big tracts of brambles. And we know what it's like when there's brambles. It's very, very difficult to get through that. Again, you've got this figure, this tall, dark figure, running on the slopes of Glastonbury. And then the fact that he's wearing a visor, a motorcycle visor, in your encounter. You mentioned the encounter on the Thames, which we've talked about. There's also episode in this podcast, the Green Gnome Visitation, which is episode 73. And in this encounter, it's a young child at the time, and he's in a family full of a number of older brothers and an older sister, and he's been having lots of experiences. At the time, what had happened was that his brother had been doing Ouija boards in his bedroom, in his own bedroom. This little boy walks into the lounge, and he said that and this is really way out, this child and this person had so many intense experiences. What happened was that the lounge wall kind of fell away and became this scene, and a motorbike rider came riding up, walked into the lounge, looked at this little boy, who was absolutely terrified and screaming and crying, and his brothers, none of them could see this apparition, if you like, this being. And this tall, dark motorcycle guy with the visor down walked into his older brother's bedroom, the bedroom that they'd been doing the Ouija board in, and disappeared. And so this figure is something that I'm really fascinated in, because it seems to be another aspect of the Dark Rider, the Dark Horseman. Dara Mason, who hosts Spirit Box podcast, excellent podcast, he's written a book on the Dark Man, and it's going to be published soon. So this is kind of his speciality, really. He's done quite a few interviews with people, so if people are interested, definitely direct you to Spirit Box to go through the playlist. It's on YouTube. There's actually a playlist on YouTube. Episode 91 of Spirit Box, Dara talks to a woman called Jessica, who was on the tour on Midsummer's Eve, June 20th. I've got a feeling it was the early 2000s, or maybe 2008, I'm not sure. She's American, so she was visiting Glastonbury with her friend. They decided to get up very, very early in the morning. For some reason, they were told that it was going to take them 3.5 hours to walk from the high street up to the top of the tour. It would take you about half an hour, probably. She thinks that they might have been directing her to go around, you know, to do the labyrinth. So they get up super, super early, about 3:15. They start to walk up the tour. And partway up, because there's nobody up there, but partway up, they see this tall, dark figure with his foot against the tower, you know, the wall at the top. And he kind of steps out and faces them. Now, before that, they've had other sensations. First of all, they see this red light moving around in the darkness, and then they see this mass form, kind of blacker than black, as she describes it. Many other people describe experiences generally in kind of these kinds of encounters of seeing this blacker than black form. After they've seen the light and this form, she then sees this man, and he actually engages with them, which is quite unusual for these sorts of encounters, because often they will appear and they will disappear. But in this encounter, a bit like with the encounter episode 46, which is called A Series of English Encounters, where my guest had seen these medieval women and you know, they'd actually engaged with them, or at least they were dressed in medieval clothing. This dark man, he says to them, do you have any tea, or do you have a cup of tea or something like that? And they're so spooked by his presence, and they're two young women, and they're really pissed off because he's really scared them. He's asking them for a cup of tea, and it kind of feels like he's purposefully making them feel uneasy. This is interesting also because there's a trickster element to that. And so he then asks them if they have a cigarette, because they say no, they don't have any tea. Asks them if they have a cigarette, and no, they don't. And then he went back up, and he put his foot against the wall. So you've got this character, this dark man, appearing on the tour itself, various forms. You've got people appearing and disappearing, offering food or asking for food or cigarettes or whatever to engage. Of course, the other encounter I should mention is Dr. Neil Rushton. So when we were there in October, we'd gone to Glastonbury for the Fairy Fair in October. So that would be October 2023. So Neil didn't have a ticket for the ball, but he wanted to just go and walk up the tour. So he went up there, I think it must have been about 10 o'clock at night when he started off, because I think that's around the time we went into the ball. Considering it's such a busy weekend at Glastonbury, he was expecting there to be lots of people up there. But he said he could not believe it. There was nobody up there whatsoever. And I'm actually going to be speaking to him soon, so perhaps I won't say all the details, but he heard some voices, disembodied voices. There was nobody up there, but he could hear these voices. So again, you know, strange kind of getting up there, finding that there's nobody there, which is very unusual. So yeah, this place is extremely magical, and it just makes me wonder. I'm sure there must be, over the centuries, reams of people who've had experiences. And I would really love to talk to people that have lived there for a long time, whose perhaps families have lived there for generations, because there's got to be stories that have been passed down about that place. And whether people have harnessed it by saying, oh yeah, we're going to go up there, or whether they've just said to each other, don't go up there. After your sighting of him, how did things shift for you in your life?
I'm a witch, and I have been for 30 years, more or less. But there have been times when I've kind of drawn back from it and been a bit more secular, if you like. But now I'm kind of a lot more open about it, really. I write about stuff. But there have been three major periods where I've been kind of moving in my understanding and connection with all that stuff and development. And then some things happened and I've drawn back. And around that time, I'd met this friend who had gone to Glastonbury with. We're no longer friends, unfortunately, but we'd gone to Glastonbury together, and there was a lot of synergy between us. There was a lot of development for me at that point as well. But then I kind of pulled back again. So it was almost like, yeah, it was at a time of kind of growth as in my sort of interest of the craft and paganism and stuff like that. But I didn't, and honestly did not know the association between the tour and that figure who I've come to know under other names. And actually, at the time, I just thought, oh, or maybe it's the ghost of a motorcyclist, or maybe it's this, or maybe it's that. But now I'm like, ah, I understand it more, if that makes sense. But at the time, I didn't think any of that. It's all quite bizarre, actually, when I think about it. And this sort of talking to you brought me back round in a big circle. Since then, I kind of did a lot of research and reading and things like that. And I come to understand, this is only my interpretation, and it might not necessarily be true, that there was a connection between the Tŵr and this Brythonic, this kind of ancient Welsh character known as Gwyn ap Nyth, whose name I've hopefully pronounced correctly there, who later became known as the Lord, or like you were saying, the King of Anufen, or the Underworld, or place of the Fair Folk. So he was this was in about the 1400s this was written down. It might have been later, I'm not sure. No, it might have been later than that, but it was quite a long time ago. This story about this priest who was in Glastonbury, Gwyn ap Nyth, the Lord of Anufen, or the Underworld, connected with the Tŵr, had invited Cullen three times to visit his fort or his castle beneath the Tŵr, because he was saying, you know, my castle and my servants and the food I have and everything that I have here is just as good as your place in heaven. So Cullen wasn't having any of this. So he took along his holy water and he went to meet him. And he said he was taken to this place beneath Tŵr, this castle, and he was given fine food, and there were servants dressed in amazing clothes, and they had wine and had gold cups and all the rest of it. And interestingly, the servants were wearing clothes which were red and blue, which I've realised now is important. But Cullen got offered food. It's interesting. This links back to the stories that you told me. And the priest said, no, I'm not going to accept your food because it's just leaves. It's just mud. It's not real. It's all a glamour. It's all magic. And at that, I think he sprinkled holy water and apparently then just found himself on the Tŵr and it all disappeared. So that's quite interesting.
So do you feel like, was this potentially your third trip there? Is there anything that you can kind of associate with that?
2008. Yeah, probably about my third trip, I think, yeah.
So being called there three times.
Yeah, three is quite an important number, isn't it? Yeah, maybe it was something to do with that. I remember on that trip as well, me and my friend couldn't find our way into Glastonbury town centre. It was like we were driving round and round and round. It was almost like we couldn't get into the centre to begin with. It took us ages and we were laughing about it, saying, oh, you know, something doesn't want us to come. And I'd also experienced as well, again, I'd had it a couple of times before when I'd been, the Glastonbury hangover that people talk about. I suppose there were quite a few strange things happening, actually, yeah.
Tell me about the Glastonbury hangover.
It wasn't a hangover because I hadn't been drinking. And I don't know where I've heard this. I think somebody maybe just told me. In those first few times that I went, I don't get it so much now. It seems to, I don't have so many problems getting into Glastonbury now. It's almost like I've been accepted. That's interesting. But those first few times, I had headaches. I was physically sick, like I'd been drinking. Felt really unwell, and I think I probably mentioned it to someone. Someone said, oh, it's the Glastonbury hangover, which they said, oh, it's to do with, I don't know, the special energy that there is in Glastonbury.
Kate Ray from Hare and the Hawthorn, who is down there right now in for the fairy fair, she always gets this. She gets quite ill when she goes to Glastonbury, and she knows lots of other people who do too. So that definitely is a thing. I'm thinking about the way that you were walking down and then you moved to make space for him. And it kind of feels quite symbolic that you're making space for him.
Yeah. With the sort of things that I know now, because obviously I'm a lot older and I've read more and I've developed my practice and my connection to various things has kind of improved, no, deepened, I'd say. There's all sorts of things now, it makes sense. But back then, I didn't have the capacity to perhaps understand it in the way I do now. I remember not feeling scared of this being or whatever it was. I don't suppose I was really aware of what it was at the time. And I'm not sure they were like, because actually, no, when I first started reading about the potential being that it could be, I was a little bit alarmed a few years ago. And I remember thinking, oh, my word, and being a bit scared. But now, with kind of more of a deeper knowledge about it, and I didn't feel scared at the time, and now I don't feel it feels less scary to me, less intimidating. I think I just stepped to the side because I didn't feel they were after me. It wasn't like the Wild Hunt were bearing down on me, at least I hope not. It was literally just this being or this energy was coming down, and I felt I just had to let them pass, you know. And by taking my shoes off and moving to the side, like you say, maybe I was showing some kind of reverence that I just, because I do a lot of things intuitively, that perhaps I just intuitively felt, oh, I need to get out of the way of this person, being, whatever it is, yeah.
You know, you can trust your intuition too. So the fact that you weren't afraid of him, you know, that's what it was. He did not provoke fear in you. And that's good to know, I think. And, it, you know, whereas people might associate these figures with, you know, being some kind of foreboding figures, and they may be frightened, he is often seen as somebody that would guide people in their lives. And so I think it's a huge blessing things shifted for you. Didn't you write?
Yeah, I'd completely forgotten about this until I got in contact with you and I started looking around to sort of try and figure out what the date was. After it happened, I'd had an interest in creative writing at the time. And I'd done National Novel Writing Month in November, where you try and write 50,000 words in 30 days and that kind of thing. And I think this was what happened. I think after that, I was quite interested in it. I did some research and ended up writing this novel. It's never really been published. Set in Glastonbury. So I must have been very inspired at the time. I was reading it yesterday and actually I was thinking, this is actually quite good. I'd put it away in a drawer thinking, oh, it was... oh, I'm never going to publish it. But I looked at it yesterday and started reading and actually quite enjoyed reading it. So it's actually brought it to my attention again to maybe look at submitting somewhere. But it was about Arthur's journey to the other world, to Anufanuanun, as it's known, based on this old myth that's in the Book of Taliesin, I believe, called, oh, I can't pronounce it in Welsh, but it's the Spoils of Anun. It's about Arthur and Taliesin, or Gwion, whatever name you want to give him, going to the underworld on Arthur's ship to steal the cauldron, which later became known as the Grail. And it's based on that, and it's other sort of things are woven into it as well, like kind of folklore, wove all sorts of strange things into it. But obviously it inspired me to write. And then yesterday it was interesting that I suddenly remembered I'd written it and I came back to it and I was like, oh, and actually opened it up and the character, the dark man or the black man or Gwyn Nieth, it was mentioned in it as well. So that's interesting.
Wow. So you haven't had any kind of sense of him since, or another simile associated archetype can be the Dark Mother. Have you ever had any experiences with the Dark Mother?
Oh. Okay. You just triggered something, another memory about Glastonbury tour. Oh, my word. It was either last year or the year before. I'd gone to Glastonbury again. Oh, I was with another friend. That's right. I was staying at the Travel Lodge in Glastonbury. That's very glamorous, isn't it? But I'd gone up to Glastonbury tour. So this friend I'd gone with this time, She's got a disability, so she doesn't do a lot of walking. And I'd said I wanted to go up the tour. I think I had some intention of trying to find the Eggstone or something. I didn't find it that time. It sent me around in circles. And I think it was later in the day, it was sort of maybe, but by the time I got down from the tour, it would have been about twilight, which is not an interesting time. But it was summer. This is going to sound really weird. So I was trying to find the Eggstone and walking around the tour And, you know, it was a time in my life I was like going through what can only be described as the dark night of the soul. It was like I was about 49, 50 now, going through the menopause, sort of big transition in your life, kind of physically, but also spiritually as well, actually. Huge spiritual shift for me around this time, still ongoing. And I was kind of like searching for answers and all sort of stuff, sort of walking around the tour. And I suddenly got this feeling that, it's going to sound really funny, that there was a polecat wrapped around my body. So like, you know, like a ferret or a polecat. Really, I told you it was odd. And I just thought, okay, what does that mean? How bizarre, what a strange thing to think. And it was only later when I got back and I started looking into it, I realised that it's, and it started off a whole journey, that I realised that it's associated with Hecate. So a dark goddess, yeah, of again, of the underworld, yeah.
It just all interlinks, doesn't it? But yeah, thank you for sharing that. And that, and sometimes these different archetypes, they may sort of, you know, look different, but they are very much, you know, weave together in meaning. And particularly at that time in your life, as you say, had you ever had experiences as a child?
Yes, but I don't remember ever seeing anything. But even as a small child, I had a strong interest in kind of witchcraft and things like that and folklore. And I was really obsessed with stories about it from being very small, as I'm sure a lot of people can kind of resonate with. I had an invisible friend, again, that's an interesting one, which I now realise. In fact, I was talking to my sister about it at the weekend. I had this invisible friend called, got no idea where that name comes from, that apparently I used to go and play with and talk to and things. So I had a lot of strange dreams as a child, definitely, and a lot of lucid dreams as a child. I'm not so good at lucid dreaming now as I was then, yeah.
It is a gift, isn't it, that we sadly get kind of socialised out of us. Those years have been, what sort of ages were you having the lucid dreams?
Probably from the ages of maybe, the imaginary friend must have been when I was quite small, like 4, 5, 6, 7. And the lucid dreaming was around then as well. I think it might have stopped adolescence, puberty maybe, is when things seem to stop. But lucid dreams where I could, you know, I'd stand in my dream, there'd be people with me. And then I'd go, okay, I'm dreaming, but I can bring you back with me. And I get them all to stand in a circle with me and hold my hand and bring them back with me. It's crazy. Yeah, really vivid, but not like that so much anymore.
It's really beautiful, you know, because a lot of us do have those dreams where we go off and have adventures at that age. Who do you think those people were, those beings were? Do you think you had a relationship with them?
It's hard to remember now who they were, whether they were, I feel like they were family. It's such a long time ago, I can't really remember much about who they were, but they were familiar to me.
I love that idea. And of course, they always are with you, you know, whether it's our ancestors, some people might make sense of it in terms of that, or our soul families. Certainly people beyond this world, either that have passed over or that we... that came from the same place as us, and they just feel so close sometimes.
I'm doing a course in psychotherapeutic shamanism recently. I've been doing kind of connection with ancestors and stuff, so yeah, I kind of understand it from a different point of view now, definitely. As you, which you were saying about kind of, you know, people that walk with you all the time, definitely understand a lot more, yeah.
And the thing is, I really wish that people knew this, because not only does it, is it a great comfort when you lose someone close to you because they're still standing by you?
Mm-hmm.
But you came in with people on the other side, as in you came from somewhere and that soul family or whoever they are there to support you, particularly in really hard times. It can literally be a lifesaver to know that.
One of the last couple of shamanic journeys that I've done to meet ancestors when I did it on this course, it was about crossing water. After I've been reading about it, I realise now that places like the Celtic Otherworld or Arnufan, you have to they often talk in the folklore about crossing water to get to them. And that was what interested me as well. When I started to think about it a bit more about episode 76, and he talked about that character being near to water, Gwynnaeth, or that particular being, the sacred son of the mist, is connected not only to the Tor but to water quite often, apparently. And I thought, oh, that's even spookier.
The really pokey experiences do, so far from my research, seem to happen around water.
I've got a weird experience around water as well in Cornwall. It was, I go to Newquay every year to visit my brother, who lives there. And we just stay at this caravan site in the centre of Newquay. I went for a walk. There's a little part there and it leads out to the estuary, the River Gannel. I went out for a walk by myself one morning. It's a strange river. So the tide was out when I was walking along it. Some people on horses were crossing it, and there were people walking dogs and things like that. And I've got a little habit now of when I go to water, I always say hello to the river spirit and just sort of acknowledge it and you know, in a kind of a humble way. I was walking on the river and I got to a bit where I couldn't cross it, and I knew there was a ford in the river where you could cross because I'd seen the horses go across. But by that time, the tide was coming back in, and I was just thinking, this doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel safe crossing this river here at all. And I was like, I'm going to get sucked into the mud or something. And then I just couldn't find any way. I had to turn around and follow my own footsteps back because I just got stuck and it wouldn't let me go any further, it felt like. And on the way back, as I was walking along, I was quite close to the river. There was something, it wasn't a fish, and I couldn't see anything, but something in the river, because I could see the water moving, and I don't know if it was bubbles or movement, but there was something quite big. It wasn't a small fish, it was a big thing in the river next to me, and it literally followed me, and it wasn't deep. It followed me it walked just in front of me, moved in the water all the way back along the river. And I was getting a bit spooked by this because I was thinking, well, fish isn't going to follow me, right? So there was something in the water and it was just following me. And I felt a bit spooked by it. And it didn't feel friendly. It just seemed other. So I had a sense that I really didn't want to go in the water, anywhere near the water. That was my experience of the River Gannel. I've since found out that it is associated. There have been lots of drownings there and a vortex of water and things like that.
When I started looking into water, I did find a lot of folklore like that too, and just all over the British Isles, of these danger zones associated with water.
If that being on the tour was anything to do with Gwynnaeth, there's another character that's associated with it in the Mabinogion, I think it is, or in the old stories, which is called, he's got a brother called Gwythyr. And one is, so Gwynnaeth is seen as the, I guess, a bit like the Holly, and he's got a brother called, I apologise for my bad Welsh pronunciation, he's got a brother called Gwythyr, whose name translates, Gwythyr Ap, I can't pronounce it, his name translates as son of the scorcher, so it's to do with the sun and summer. So people have said later on they link it to the Holly King and the Oak King. And they fight over this female being, whose name I cannot pronounce, but it looks like Crethilad or something like that, which is she's the daughter of Lud, and I'd been dreaming recently. I didn't know any of this. And I'd been dreaming that I was trying to get to a place. And in my dream, I could never quite get there, but I knew it was called Lud's Church, which is another kind of freaky link here. And then last year I went there because I found out it was in Derbyshire. And it wasn't anything particularly. It's just this interesting kind of stony chasm in the middle of Derbyshire. It's all kind of overgrown with ferns and things, and it's quite spooky. But there were a lot of tourists there, and I couldn't really sit around. People were just taking photos and wandering around, lots of being tourists. But while I was there, I remember just kind of like finding some holly, and I remember thinking, oh, this is connected to the Holly King and the Oak King, and kind of coming up with stuff in my head. But then it's only reading about it today, actually, that I realise how that links. But again, you know, perhaps humans tend to draw their own patterns and links that don't really exist, so I don't know.
I think you can trust it, and I think that you can kind of follow along the path of it and see where it leads, really. As long as it's kind of starting to build a picture and make sense to you, then it doesn't even have to make sense to anyone else. But I think that sounds pretty meaningful to me, and I would just follow it and see if it feels like it has any expansion to it. Thank you so much for sharing this with me. I really appreciate it. And it's been really great to hear that. I suspect that we're going to be learning more and more. To you, what does he represent?
I think to me, I think he's misunderstood. And I think to me, he represents gatekeepers, not the right word, the point of access between this world and the lower world. He's still there. I think it's more than technical gremlins at play, that they represent a connection between this world and the lower world, which is not, in my opinion, anything that's to be necessarily scared of. I think that's just a Christianized interpretation of it. I think maybe it's about a point of transition in people's lives, about change. Maybe confronting things that they need to confront in their lives. Maybe a little bit of trickster kind of energy to that, you know, things, obstacles in your path, those kind of things, challenges, but those things that kind of make you stronger. I think that's my experience anyway.
Do you think the way that he ran in a kind of rush down the hill, does that have any kind of significance for you about what took place in your life afterwards?
I'm not sure. I think I have to reflect on it a little bit more, really. But I would say earthy. I have had a meditation experience more recently. And I meditate quite a lot. I was doing this recently, and I think I met a similar energy to what this might have been on the tour. In the meditation, the inner groove was really different to how it normally is. It was very other. And normally in my inner groove, I have to cross water to get to it. And there were beings in the water, like looking at me. And there were beings in the wood, eyes looking at me. And it just felt really, really different and really, really energetic. And then as I was meditating, I felt a very strong sense that there was another part of me, like a fetch almost, familiar with that, or another sat right behind me, but more wild. And it was a really strong experience. And reflecting on it, I realise now, I didn't know this at the time because I was trying to think, how can I get back to that feeling? I realise now that it was on, it was in Bulk Eve. But now, only now, because I was like talking to somebody about it recently on a course, I was saying, oh, I really want to experience that wild feeling, because I had this real sense of that kind of energy of that underworld, other male presence that was really wild, and I liked it, but I haven't been able to go back to it. And I was like, why can't I do it? What's different? And then when I was looking back through my journals, I was like, ah, it was in Bulk Eve. Okay.
Excellent. Well, it's something you can work with anyway, because you have familiarised yourself with it. And I'll send you, thank you very much indeed for sharing your encounter.
That's okay. Yeah, I'm happy to share. And just struck how similar it was with episode 76. So thank you.
To those who dare to see, blackouts are the brightest of knowing. Know thy will in fullness of the rules. As one, separation is healed. Fleeting order is imposed, only to allow chaos to move. love miss